Good morning, everybody. And there are some outside. There are sheets outside, a few left. Welcome, everybody, to the new refurbished OU Centre. It's certainly very nice to be here in this new, fresh environment. The only problem, and this could be a major problem, is they haven't put the clock back. And there is a serious possibility I might just talk and talk and talk until it gets dark. So I do have a watch, and I will take it off and put it down here, and hopefully that will remind me to stop at some stage. The Shir today is sponsored by David Katz in memory of his father, Le'ilu Nishmas Yechezkel ben David Yehuda, Zecher Livracha. Should be an Ilu Neshama for him, and we should learn some good Talmud Torah for us as well as the Ilu Neshama. Today's topic, in the run-up to the Aseret HaDibros, in next week's Parsha, I'd like to pick on some of the Bein Adam L'Chavero aspects of the Aseret HaDibros. Today I'd like to talk about Chemda, jealousy, envy, something that doesn't get spoken about so much, and maybe we can explore a little bit what that is. Next week, I'd like to maybe talk about the Geneva part of the Aseret HaDibros, even though the Loisigno technically is the issue of kidnapping. I'm not going to talk about kidnapping, but I may talk about some Geneva issues, including some modern issues such as copyright and patenting. We'll see how that works. And I may even speak about murder a little bit, but that's we'll see. What is there to say about murder, you might ask? Well, there's plenty to say. But we're thinking about that going forward. As I mentioned before, I'm here with God this week and next week, although they say it's going to snow next week. I don't know what that means exactly. They say all sorts of things and it often doesn't happen, usually doesn't happen. But assuming that the roads are clear, please God, will be a shir next week. But the 2 weeks after that, I'm away and there'll be other good people here to give the shiurim. Maybe I should start with a comment that I made at the beginning of the whole series about the Ten Commandments. There's a beautiful idea by the Mabit. The Mabit was one of the commentators around 300 years ago in the Achronim, and he mentions an interesting chazal. He says, as everybody knows, there are 10 commandments, 5 on one side, 5 on the other. The first 5 are Bein Adam L'Makom, between a person and God, not to take God's name in vain, to keep Shabbat, etc., to believe in God. The second 5, of course, are Bein Adam L'Chavero, not to steal, not to lie, not to cheat, not to envy, etc. He makes the point there that the luchos were the same size, they were 2 luchot, and Chazal say that the writing of the luchot covered the entire luach. Each luach was covered with the writing of the dibros. So the Mabit says, well, that's strange, because if you look at the first 5 commandments, the Bein Adam L'Makom, there are hundreds of words. I counted them once, 160-something, whatever, a lot of words. If you look at the second side, there are almost no words. There are about 15 words on the whole thing, a bit more. So he says, you see from here, if the words covered the whole luach, the first thing the Jewish people saw when they got the Aseret HaDibros were 2 font sizes, 2 print sizes. One is the small print, which is the Bein Adam L'Makom, which is written in small print to fit on the luach, and one is the large print, which is the Bein Adam L'Chavero. And the Mabit says, you see, the very first thing the Jewish people see of Torah is that there's the large print and the small print. I mentioned this on the first year, and we should never confuse the large print and the small print, even though the small print's important. Just like Hillel says to the Ger when he says to him, convert me on condition that you can teach me the whole Torah on one leg. We also saw that source at the very beginning. And Hillel says to him, Da'alach sani l'chavrech lo tavid, whatever is hateful to you, don't do to other people. Zeh kol ha-Torah kulai, he said, that's the whole Torah. The idich perusha, the rest is perush. Zilgumon, now go learn the small print. Don't ignore the small print. I used to be a lawyer. Believe me, if you ignore the small print, then you give the lawyers lots of fees. Okay? Nevertheless, it's small print. And therefore, with that in mind, maybe let's look at some of the big print issues. Look at number 1, please, and 2. Number 1 and 2 are the 2 versions of this mitzvah on the first luchos that we see in Yitro, and then later in the replay that we see in Reb Chanan. Number 1. Lo sachmod beisreecha. Do not have chemda. We'll have to translate the word chemda. Desire, envy, for your friend's house.
Lo sachmod eishes riecho, do not have chemda for your friend's wife. V'avdoi, or his servant, amasoi, or his female servant, v'sharoi, his ox, chamoroi, his donkey, v'kol ashel areecha, or anything that belongs to your friend. And therefore, the mitzvah mentioned in number one is chemda. And it specifies some things, a bias, a spouse, a servant, and property. But when the mitzvah is repeated in Beit Hanan, it introduces some new elements. Number two, V'loy sachmad eishes re'echa, do not have chemda for your neighbor's or for your friend's wife. We saw that in the first one over here. It starts with the wife. V'loy sisaveh, do not have taiva, now that's a new thing, beis re'echa, for your friend's house. Sadehu, or his field, we didn't see the field in the first one. And then it's more or less the same, va'avdo, va'amato, v'shoro, v'chamoro, v'kol ashel re'echa. So the new element, the major new element in the second the repetition of the luchos is the issue of taiva. What is the difference between chemda and taiva? And we need to work out what these are, because halachically these will be very different issues which will have different specifications. And we have to define what is really going on with this mitzvah. How specific is this mitzvah of chemda? Is there, and there's, if you like, a spectrum, there's a continuum from people's general sense of, oh, I wish I was a rich man, you know, I can sing you the song, but I'm not going to, okay? I wish I won the lottery, and people are often very illogical about that. When they know there's a large lottery prize, they go out and buy tickets, even though that makes the chances of winning much, much smaller. But, okay, fine, there's one born every minute. Is it general materialism, a sense of aggressive need to acquire things, to get a good job, to get money? Or is it a sense, in a very specific way, that I look over my neighbor's fence and they have a new car, so I want a new car? Or is it even more, that they have that car, I want exactly the same car that they have, because if I don't have the same car, then I'm not as good as them? Or is it even more than that? I'd have to want their car. I want them to sell me their car because I'm not happy that they have it and I don't have it. And does it even go beyond that? There was a well-known case in London many years ago. I'm not getting into any details, but where there was one of the rich members of the community in London decided that he wanted to be married to the wife of one of the other less rich members of the community, and actually entered into a transaction with this man that he was going to divorce his wife and sell his wife to this particular person. I'm not making this up. This happened in London. This was a scandal many years ago in London. One of the prominent dayanim in London picked up on this and made a public statement against this person, naming them that this was going on in the community, and was then sued for libel by this person in the London courts. There was an enormously public libel trial, very expensive, which the Dayan actually won in the end, because it turned out that he was quite right. This had happened, and the scandal in the community was very significant, born out of this issue of Eishes Re'echa. Like Sachmoid Eishes Re'echa. So if you think this is a technical, theoretical thing, then it's not. This happened in that particular case in a very specific way, so we kind of have to look at the halachas here and see how that works. Look at number three. Yes, sir?
I'm just curious,
who sued them, the seller or the buyer? No, the buyer, as it were, sued the Dayan for having libeled him for having entered into a contract to buy somebody else's wife. But in English libel law, all you need to do to prove you're innocent is to prove it's true. And he proved it was true. And it took a long time and a lot of legal fees to prove that it was true. But prove it nevertheless, he did. And I remember this was some years ago now. Number three. Lo sachmoid. So the Gemara, or rather Mechilta here, Chazal, pick up on Chemda and they ask the following. Lo sachmoid. It says Lo sachmoid ul halan hu oimer, and later it says Lo sisaveh. Why is there a difference? And this is obviously an important factor, that the second luchos are quite different in some ways to the first. Why is there that difference? This is one of the points that Chazal pick up on and want to understand. Generally, when there are repetitions between similar stories or similar accounts where one is slightly different to the other, this is obviously a source of interest. In the modern academic world, this is to a large degree the basis for modern high criticism of the Bible, which I'm not getting into now, but high criticism is something that is, if you like, a modern manifestation of a very old idea where the Mefarshim are looking and asking, why are there differences between these accounts? And here we see that as well. The Ramban, I think I mentioned this before, the Ramban actually says that the second Luchos can be seen in many ways as a Perush on the first. The second account is almost like a commentary on the first, just like Sefer Dvarim, the Mishnah Torah, is very much like a commentary on what came earlier in the Torah, and is a bridge between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. I'm not getting into that now, it's quite a complex idea, but certainly Chazal pick up on this in the Mechilta and ask the question. What is the difference? L'chayev et hatava b'tnei atzmo v'et hachemda b'tnei atzmo. Say Chazal, halachically, there are two different isurim, chemda and taiva. So what are they? Eze hi taiva. What is taiva? Ha'oimet, someone who says, lavai she. Halavai. Halavai. If only. Someone who says, if only, we'll have to narrow that down. I mean, everyone says halavai sometimes. Is everyone guilty of the isur of taiva? We'll see not. So someone who says halavai, what is chemda? Hakovish kvushim niklan, someone who presses the person to actually buy the item. Uminalan hataiva adam sofer lachmoid. And how do we know that there's a slippery slope? You start with taiva and then it leads to chemda. Shneimar, it says loisisave, but loisachmoid. I'm not entirely sure exactly where the end is quoting from because there is no pasuk that says it in that order. But the Gemara clearly understands that there is a slippery slope. One leads to this, and this leads to that, and that leads to this. Which, by the way, flags up an issue that we talked about before, when we talked about bearing a grudge and taking revenge, that sometimes the Torah makes a geder around itself. We are used to the idea that the rabbis create a fence around the Torah, but the Torah actually creates a fence around itself on many occasions, and this was, if you like, picked up by the rabbis, and that's the rabbinic structure model of a fence, of a siag. For example, we see on Pesach, I will mention Pesach because it's coming over the horizon for those who like to prepare in advance. I'll mention Pesach, it's nearly Rosh Chodesh Adar, so you know, Mishinichnas Adar Marvin Besimcha, the reason that the Simcha is because Pesach is coming, that's what Rashi says there, so I've mentioned that. On Pesach we see, for example, there's an Issa to eat Chometz, which is a Kareis, and there is a separate Issa to own Chometz, which is a geder, which is a Torah issa, which is there in order to prevent a person from eating chometz. We see also there is a prohibition of making sculptures for idolatry, and there is another Torah prohibition against making sculptures even for aesthetic purposes, which, by the way, is a separate, very interesting issue, which we're not dealing with now, but what indeed are you allowed to make in terms of sculpture? What is the Jewish attitude towards art? 3D art, there's a lot to say about that, which is not for now. It's certainly not a Ben Adam Chavero, but it's an example of that. Shomenigia is another one. The Torah prohibits certain sexual relationships and also prohibits touching people in a sexual way, which might lead to those relationships. There are many examples, and this is one of them. So we have Chemda and we have Taiva. Can a person be guilty, if you like, of Chemda, even by just the way they speak or think? Says the Chazal, no. Number four, Oyafilu Chomed b'dibur. Can a person even be over on Chomed or Chemda by saying things in a certain way? Talmud Lama the Torah says no. Lo sachmoid kesef, he brings a posik later in Dvarim. Lo sachmoid kesef v'zava aleihim v'lakach v'lacha. Do not desire the things of the non-Jewish nations you're coming to inherit, if you like, to live there, and take them. Malahalan ache osemasa. Just like over there, it's don't desire them in order to take them. Afkan ad she'oise ma'asa. Here too, one has to actually take the item itself. Therefore, chemda is only an issa if one actually does a ma'asa, does an action and acquires the thing itself, even if one pays for it. And that's the whole the interesting point here in number 5 and 6. 5, Tosfos raises a question. Yeshloimer, there is an opinion, deloy sachmoid mashma deloy yaiv dami. Maybe loy sachmoid is if you didn't pay for something, you persuaded someone to give it to you, you took it, if you like, by, subterfuge, persuasion, menaces, that's what I was saying, acquired by menaces. I don't know if you say that anymore. The Rambam says no. The Rambam Paskins clearly, we'll see the Shulchan Aruch says this, even if you pay good money, that is still chemda. And have a look at the way the Rambam words it, number 6. Kolach chomed avdo, o masai, o beisai, V'keila shel chaveru. Anyone who desires to acquire somebody else's servants or possessions, etc. Or kol davar she'efshelo she'yikne menenu. Or anything they could possibly buy from them. V'hichvid alav b'raim. And they pressed them and pressed them. V'hitziboy. And they urged them. Until eventually the person says, oh, okay, just take it. Don't drive me crazy. And they sell it to them. Even though they paid good value for it. Said they are breaking a Torah mitzvah. As it says, and your only over, says the Rambam, when you actually acquire the thing. Looking over the neighbor's fence and wishing, if only I had that beautiful car, is not chemda. But pressing the neighbor to sell you his car and acquiring the car, that is chemda. As it says, the question is, how far does this go? Am I allowed to go knocking on people's doors saying, I like your house, are you interested in selling it? People do this.
Yeah.
And very often, the sellers are delighted. Someone comes to your house and knocks on the door and says, would you like to sell your house? I'll offer you a lot of money. Great, that's fantastic. So the Raavad immediately says, V'loi amar roitza ani. This only applies if the seller doesn't say roitza ani. Meaning, yes, I'm happy to. Meaning, the first limitation, the Rambam didn't mention this, but the Raavad mentions that if actually everybody's very happy with the transaction, then that's not called chemda. It's only if you press them and press them and press them, and if you like, out of frustration, just to get rid of you, they eventually say yes, that's chemda. Although the Rambam didn't say that. The Rambam, it sounds like maybe even if the person says roitze ani, then they're still doing an issa. But certainly if the person doesn't say roitze ani, they're doing an issa. What is called pressing a person? Can't you ask someone, would you like to sell? And the answer is, of course you can. I brought you a tshuva from the Beit Tzela Chochma. The Beit Tzela Chochma was Rav Bezalel Stern. He was born in Hungary, he lived after the war in Italy, and he went to Australia and eventually came to Jerusalem. He wrote some interesting tshuvas, and he asked the following question. How many times do you have to ask someone to be guilty of this aveira? Number 8. De mevakesh bet pa'amim eino bichlal matzir. To ask once, okay. To ask twice, okay. But 3 times is no good. And he brings a raya, ksas raya, lafiani as daiti. I think there is a raya for this. De mevakesh gimel pa'amim havi bichlal matzir. Then, and he brings a complicated raya from the laws of Nadarim, that if someone says eat it, you say I won't eat it, and then they eat it and say I won't eat it, and then a third time they make a shavua. So the third time is, if you like, the makiv patish, that's what creates the issue there. And therefore he says you can ask someone, you can ask them even again, but you cannot ask them a third time, even if they say yes. And sell you the item. And therefore, I think if you want to knock on people's doors asking if they'll sell, then ask them and ask them again. But once you have to ask them a third time, you may be on difficult halachic territory. Of course, the question is, does this only apply between Jews and Jews or between Jews and non-Jews? And it does say re'echa, constantly re'echa, 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 and usually speaking, re'echa is a mitzvah that applies between a Jew and another Jew. And therefore, if you do fancy a certain house down the street, which belongs to a non-Jewish neighbor, and you do want to ask them 100 times to sell it, then ask a shayla whether that applies between Jews and non-Jews, whether that's right, whether that's wrong. Again, for the technical issue of chemda, we will see later on that as a broader hashkafic principle, the idea of looking over people's fences, constantly wanting what they have, is itself a separate major problem, even though it might not be technically the issue of chemda. Rabbeinu Yonah in number 9 adds an interesting question, which is at the bottom of the first page. What happens if you're in a position where actually you're putting pressure on the other person to sell something because of the relative, if you like, difference between your status? Look at what he says in number 9. Im yichsov adam sheyim kalot chaveru sada. If a person presses another to sell them their field, or kerem, or their vineyard. And remember the story of Achav and Naval in Izevel with the vineyard of Kerem Navot. Presses and presses to sell them. Or echem mechvatav, or any one of their possessions. Okay? The law yeshiv national lemachra, and they're not really happy to sell. They don't want to sell. But you're just pressing them and pressing them. Im yitzaboy beroy divrei tachanunim. If you're pressing them in such a way that yebosh lahashipanav, that they'll be embarrassed to say no, you're using emotional blackmail or guilt tripping them in some way. ask the love support, then that's also a problem. Because you're abusing the relationship. Not that anyone, God forbid, would ever use emotional blackmail in their relationships with anybody else. Certainly not parents or children. For sure not. I can't imagine that. But if you did that, that's also a problem. Because that's like forcing somebody. You're playing on their emotional sensitivities to get them to do something. Or what if you're an honored person, if you're somebody who you can't say no to? There are certain people in life that you can't say no to. I don't seem to be one of those people. It seems from my involvement with people, plenty of people say no to all sorts of things I ask for. But if you're one of those people that you just can't say no, she'im yishal she'ela, or upon of lo yafil, you won't know, no one is going to say no. Asur lishal, you're not allowed to ask. Because again, that could be chemda. You have to be very careful about that. Bilti im yodea, and unless you know, kinos nitzin lo benefesh chavta, they'll be happy to give it to you, and they won't be scared of you. Then you can think about that. So again, I'm not sure everyone really thinks about this that much, but if a person is in a situation where they may intentionally or unintentionally pressure others to sell things, is a potential problem. What about a more general outlook of materialism? Let's look at number 10, the top of the second page. Mikol Makom, here's the Rebbe of Tzanz. The Admor Mitzanz, we haven't had much opportunity to quote the Chassidish Admorim, but here we can make that, make good for that. Mikol Makom Pshita, he says, he thinks it's obvious. What if you want everything that your neighbor owns? Okay? You have no specific issues, you just want everything. And all his possessions, Shalchavero, have a bichlal alav. It's certainly included in this issa. Avshe einu davam asun, even though it's not one specific thing. You can't point to the lawnmower and say, that's what I want. I want everything you have. Okay? Mikol Makom, nevertheless, and here is the fiddler on the roof angle, kishiroitzi liyos ashir. If you want to be a rich person, kaplaini like Rothschild. Okay? Loi have a bichlal alav. That's not this issa. You want to be rich and you're poor? That's not this Aveira. Maybe something else, we'll see at the end. But there has to be some specific focus on what they own. The chemda has to fall on the chefetz shech Aveira, shiroiti kemosa mamash. That you want one just like that. Now that's interesting, because the Rebbe of Tzanz seems to be saying, it's not just that I want yours, it's that I look and I want one just like that. Shalafi dasa, that according to your opinion, dimyuno ain yofi bahafla kashel chaveiro. There's nothing like your neighbor's thing. Whatever it is, no one else has one like it. Veroiti gamken chefetz kazem mamash. You want one just like that? You can't live without one. As have bichlal ha'issa. That's including the issa. Now, actually, that's not what the Rambam said. The Rambam said you have to buy that one that they own. You want theirs dafka. Meaning, it's not just that you want it; it's that you don't want them to have it, which is another part of this. But the Rebbe of Tzanz seems to be saying, no, it's if I really, I can't live without a lawnmower just like their lawnmower, and I run out to the shops and buy one, then I'm doing this issa. Although it must be said that, again, I quote the Batela Chochma, this may only relate to something which is unusual. Key number 11 for a second, and we'll move then on to Taiva. Amnam Ra'isi B'Shalis and Tshuva's Eretatzvi. He says, he quotes another Tshuva there, Rav Stern, and he says, V'sham Heishiv Hagon HaKodesh Migur, and he quotes the Gera Rebbe, okay, that we're getting all the Rebbeim in here. The Loi Sachmoid Shaykh Rak V'Chepet She'enu Matsui. Maybe Loi Sachmoid is only on an unusual thing. Meaning, I don't think it's a problem. You look over your neighbor's fence and you see they've got a handy dandy new kind of lawnmower, and you think, ooh, that would be excellent. That would be really useful for my garden. I'm going to go out and buy one from Walmart next week. I don't think there's any problem with that at all. You saw someone else had something, so you went and bought it. But then you notice that they suddenly acquired some new whatever it is that nobody else has. Oh, if they have one, I've got to have one. Maybe that's an issue of chemda, and people are like this. People really are like this. Yes, now, the Rambam said you have to buy his. But here we see that maybe if you can't live without one, and it's not a normal thing that people have, there could even be an issue of loisachmoy because you've decided you can't live without it. You had a question?
Yeah, which source are we on?
Number 11. We don't know about to start number 12. What is taiva? So that's chemda. Chemda involves buying something. You can't be doing the issur of chemda unless you actually do a maisa. We saw that. Everyone agrees on that. If you look at number 12, you'll see we get into now taiva. The Kol HaMitzvah verses, the Rambam, anyone who has a taiva, beito, who has a desire for the other person's house, or ishto, or his wife, the kelav, or his belongings, shel chavero, the Kol Kiyotzi Bahem, mishar dvarim, she'esh shelo liknosam, anything that they could buy, okay, which is interesting, we'll see at the end, there are some things, to quote the phrase, that money can't buy. And if you have desire for them, maybe that's not a problem, but if you have desire for something that your neighbor has that money can buy, kevan shechashav belibo eich yikne davaze. As soon as you work out in your mind, how am I going to get hold of that thing? Venista libo bedava, and your heart has become, if you like, enticed by that. Ava veloitzasa shel veloitzisave. You have done the issa of loitzitave. Ve'ein tava ele beliboy bilvad, which is interesting. Which is, even if you never bought it, but you've just now in your mind decided, this is what I have to have, I'm not going to be able to live without it, then you have done an issa doraisa of loisitave. Which is interesting. There aren't that many averas you can do in your head. Most averas are ma'asi. There's something that you do with your hands. Here's an avera that you can do in your head. There are others, loy tasuru achre levavchem va'achre einechem, which the Beforeshim bring down is an issa to fantasize about doing averas. You wouldn't, of course, God forbid, speak Lashon Hara, but you fantasize every night about speaking Lashon Hara. Maybe that's a separate issue. Okay? Or you fantasize about killing somebody, God forbid, loy tasuru achre levavchem. But this is a separate issue you can do in your head. And the Aruch HaShulchan wants to know, how far does that go? Come on. All sorts of things pop into your mind that you wish you had this or you wish you had that. He says, when do you actually do this isur? So look at number 13. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Michil Michal Alevi Epstein, living in the Varduch in the late 19th, early 20th century, says the following. Number 13. By the way, if you're interested in reading a biography of the Aruch HaShulchan, and there's a wonderful book called My Uncle the Netziv, which was, of course, banned. My Uncle the Netziv. Which is an English translation of the Makor Baruch. The Makor Baruch was written by the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Baruch Alevi Epstein, who wrote the Torah Tanima as well. He actually was a banker in Europe before the war and during the First World War, when he said he was a big Talmudic genius, and he said his head was too distracted because of the war, the First World War, to write proper Perushim. Therefore he said, I'll write some biography, something a bit lighter. And he wrote a book called the Makor Baruch, which is in some places very interesting and actually quite controversial. He spills the beans on some of the things that were happening in Europe in the late 19th century that not everybody necessarily wanted to have spilt. And there's a bit of a question, does he exaggerate a little bit? He has a lot to say about the Netziv, his uncle, my uncle the Netziv, which was the English version. He has a lot to say about the Netziv's wife. The Netziv's second wife and first wife, and there was a lot of antagonism in the yeshiva. Some people liked her, some people didn't like her. There was one occasion where the Talmidim was so unhappy with her, they actually put a matseva with her name on in the front garden. And if you could imagine such a thing. There was if you think that things only happen today, it's not true. Things always happened. In fact, there was a book that was, my uncle the Netziv itself was banned, of course, because it said some things like the Netziv used to read the newspaper on Shabbat. You can't say that. And therefore they banned that one. But the question is whether, again, the Makor Baruch, it's not always clear when he's, you know, being a little bit more expansive with the situation. But of course, there was a recent book, The Making of a Gadol, which was very much in the same vein by a very eminent Talmud Chacham, Rav Nosson Kamenetsky, who lives here in Yerushalayim, and he brought out that book many years ago, and of course that also people felt was too revelatory, if you like, of what was really going on in Europe in the 19th, early 20th century. He felt, of course, that was inspiring in its own way. You saw that many of the Gedolim, who later became great people, had difficult bumps along the way. And maybe as kids they were a bit wild and got into this problem and that problem, but they overcame them and they did tshuva and they became the great people. He said he felt that was more inspiring than writing the hagiography that this kid never did anything wrong and they were born a tzaddik and they never even, you know, touched their diaper because they were such a great, you know, etc. So
he felt that it was more inspiring to give real accounts, but you can make your own mind up about that. If you can get hold of The Making of a Godel, you're doing very well. You have to get a pirate copy of it. Don't tell me you have it at home, right?
The person who published it, who covers all it, has copies. Otherwise, you can't get it. There's nothing back.
Okay, so basically, if you have the right connections, you can get the copy. Anyway, the Nisiv writes about his father, the Oruch HaShulchan, quite a lot. There's that book, and there are others. So look at number 13. Ksiv. Lo Tachmu v'lo Titaveh. There is an Isser of Chemda and Taiva. Eina Kavana, says the Oruch HaShulchan. It's not trying to say, Al Taiva Saleh Bilvad, that you just have a desire. V'lo Maaseh, without an action. V'al Fina, because we learn with Nisiv in Parshas Eked, Lo Tachmu Ketiv HaZavaleh. And Lakachalacha, there has to be some Maaseh in it. Now that was Chemda, is that true of Taiva? The Surah, the Loi Sachmoid, when it comes to Loi Sachmoid, who does Kekashiyase Maisa. We saw that. It's only when you do something actively, not just you want to. The Afal Pishem in Midas Chasidah Shaloi Lachmoid Klal, even though there is a Midas Chasidah not to desire anything, but we'll get to that later, Afilu Belev, even in your mind, Mashiyesh Chaver, what your friend has, Bekomaka Belav, the Loi Sachmoid, Eina Oibe Rakba Oise Maisa. Fine. Chemda is only when you buy it. The love the loisisaveh and the love of loisisaveh afal gav the taiva hizbalev, even though that does indeed happen in your mind, he says, but it's not just a fleeting thought. Likol makam eina over the taivas liboy bilvad. You're not over just when you have a taiva. Ela im kain mechashev beliboy. You have to calculate it in your mind. You have to work it all out. Eich lahasiga mechavero. How are you going to do it? And you think it all through and you have a wicked, cunning plan, that, he says, that is how you, then you're over on Losi Sava. But Kevin Shegoyme Dava Zeba Liboy, once you have it all worked out in your mind, Oiba Aloy Sisava. So, this is an issa which I'm sure most people have probably haven't even thought about or heard of, but nevertheless, says the Aruch HaShulchan, when you have it all worked out in your mind, that is the issa of Losi Sava. Let's look at the Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll look at some more general Hashkafic issues. The Shulchan Aruch paskens this in Choshen Mishpat in number 14 as follows: Kol Chaymed, Kol Chaymed Avdo Yoram Avdo Yor Beiso or Kelav Shechaveru or Kol Davar She'ev Sheshikn Mimenu. We've seen this before. Anyone who has desire to buy their neighbor's servants and belongings, etc., the Hichbid Al Avraim, and they press them, the Hitziboy, and they push them Achelak from Mimenu until they eventually buy it. Harizet Oyvav Loi Sachmoid. That is Loi Sachmoid. And then Loisi Saveh is Kol Amitzaveh Beisoy or Ishtoy VeKelav Shel Chaveri VeKoki Yitzipazeh Kaven Shechoshov BeLiboy. As soon as they work out in their mind, Eich Yiknedava there. How am I going to buy this? The Nifta BeLiboy the Pedaver, and they have convinced themselves that they need to do this. Then Avu BeLoisi Saveh Shel Loisaveh the Ein Taiva Ela BeLeiv Bilvad. Fine, but then he adds another more hashkafic issue. Number Yud in Yud Aleph Hataiva Mebili DeChimod. There's a slippery slope. Taiva leads you to Chemda. The Hachimud may be lide Gezel. And Chemda leads you to Gezel. She'im loy ratsu abaylim linko. What happens if ultimately they refuse? And they really won't sell it no matter how hard you push. Afal pi she'hir b'lehem b'damim. Even if you offer them millions, the hipti b'ram, and you press them hard, and they still say no, yavo lide Gezel. You might end up being so obsessed with it that you can't live without it, and you steal it. She'ne'emar, v'chamdu sadois v'gazolim. It's a pasuk in Micha. They had chemde, but that they eventually led to gezela. Ve'im amdu habalim, and then if you jump in to try and steal it, and the people try and defend themselves, b'fanav in front of you, l'hatzel m'moinam, omanau miligzol, and they stop you from stealing, lavi l'shvichas damim, and you can end up in murder. Say ulamad, go and learn mimase achav v'navot. And therefore, some things sometimes he's giving a very interesting point, and there's a lot of literature that's been written, fiction and non-fiction, about things take on a momentum of their own. And you end up in a place that you could never have imagined being because of little steps, small steps that started off with taiva, led to chemda, led to gezel, and then ultimately can lead to murder in a way that someone could possibly never have imagined at the very beginning. Now, the Gemara in Sota has, in number 16, we'll go down to 16, to skip to 16, has an interesting approach to this as well. And it brings a number of examples of people who ended up in the slippery slope. Shekol hanoisin eina b'masha eina shaloi. And now for the rest of the shir, we're looking more at the hashkafic angle, the broader angle. Anyone who puts their eyes on that which doesn't belong to them.
even if technically they're not guilty of chemda or taiva. Masha mevakesh einu notin loy, what they want, they don't get. Umashe bayado, and what they already have, no klim heimenu, they lose. Meaning, if you want to get too much, you end up possibly with nothing. And who do we learn this from? V'chein matzinu b'nachash hakadmoni, the snake. And it's an interesting medrash here. Shinas ne'ena b'mashe ena roiloi. He said, the snake set its eyes on what was not fitting for it. Umashe bikesh loy nitnu loy, and what it wanted it didn't get. Umashe b'yado no klim heimenu, and what it had, it lost. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu. Because God says to the snake, Ani amati yehei melech al kol behema v'chaya. You could be a melech, by the way, there's a lot of symbolism in the snake. The snake is not, the story of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden is not the story just of two naked people and a talking snake. If that's what you think it is, then you've missed 95% of what's going on there. Maybe even 100%. It's deeply symbolic of all sorts of mankind issues, the human condition and the relationship with the Yetzirah. The Adam and Chava and the snake are highly representative of these ideas. Whether we're talking about two actual physical people as well, so then there's lots of mafushim that talk about that they could distinction between Adam and Ha-Adam, meaning the story works in parallel levels. You're talking about people, and you're also talking about ideas which are way beyond those people. It's a difficult thing to know exactly when the symbolism ends and the, if you like, the story, the historical story kicks in. And this is not an easy matter, which is way beyond today's shir. But we do not take every verse in the Torah literally. If we did, we would be heretics in our own right. God has a hand, God has an outstretched arm, God has eyes and legs. We do not take those literally. Therefore, if you take the Torah entirely literally, clearly a person like that is an apikoros. But if you take the Torah completely symbolically, then that's also not correct. That's also apikoros. So where is the truth? Where do you, if you like, pull away from the symbolic meaning and you say, this is an account of an actual historical event, and when do you give it, this is not so easy. If you're interested in this particular issue, there was a fascinating debate between Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks and Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins is a very well-known anti-religious campaigner. He's an important evolutionary biologist in Cambridge. But he's not just a scientist. He has a life mission to try and convince people that religion is wrong. He says that if you bring your children up in a religious environment, that's child abuse because you're basically brainwashing them. Okay, you know, we all brainwash our children. It's called education. It's a line between the two. But there's a debate that Rabbi Sacks had a few years ago with Richard Dawkins just before Rosh Hashanah. And I advise you, if you're interested in this issue of the Torah and literal understandings of the Torah, non-literal understandings, he really puts Rabbi Sacks on the ropes there. And he pushes him about to what extent he takes the biblical stories literally. And you'll see Rabbi Sacks' answer there. I'm not going to spoil it for you. There's a 20-minute version which you can watch it. You can just Google it and you'll find it. Just put Rabbi Sacks, Richard Dawkins debate in there. And there's an hour and 20-minute version that the BBC put on. It's one of the few things the BBC has done in recent years which is worth watching, in my humble opinion. So certainly on religion. So I advise you to do that. It's very interesting. And I don't remember. It doesn't really have a name. If you're interested in searching on the web for it, you'll find it. It's a video on YouTube that you'll be able to bring up. Just put in Rabbi Sacks, Richard Dawkins, Science, Torah, you'll get the whole thing. And by the way, if this is a topic which interests you as well, and Chumash and how to understand Chumash and Science, Rabbi Sacks' book, The Great Partnership, is a must read. The Great Partnership. It's an excellent, excellent book. One of the most important books on the issue written in the last 30 years.
What is it called again?
The Great Partnership.
Partnership.
Okay, he talks about a partnership between religion and science. Anyway, I'm off topic. The snake, he says as follows. Ani amati yehei melech al kol behem v'chaya. I thought you would be the king of the beasts. Third line, number 16. V'achshav now, orohu mikol behem v'mikol chayas asadim. Now you're cursed. Because, of course, he desired Chava, which again is symbolic. What does it mean that the snake wants to marry or to connect with Chava? Not for now. Ani amarti yalech b'koymas kufa, I wanted you to walk proudly. Ba'akshav al g'choyno yelech, and now you will slither on your stomach. Ani amarti yehei ma'achalo ma'achal adam, I wanted you to eat from the human food, if you like. Ba'akshav afar yochal, and now he will have to chew the dust. Hu amar, he said, Eroges Adam, I want to kill Adam, Ba'eta et Chava, I want to marry Chava. And again, this is highly symbolic of the Yetzer Hara wanting to be internal within the person as opposed to external. Meaning there is a role, there is a positive role for the Yetzer Hara in the world that could have been played. He could have walked proudly and eaten, as it were, from the table of human beings, whatever that means, but actually wanted to get inside Chava. Achshav now, Eva v'ashis bein Echo, or bein Ha'isha, or bein Zarcha, or bein Zara, etc. V'chein matzinu b'kayin, we saw this true with Kayin, meaning in all these cases, what they wanted, they never got, and what they had, they lost. And then it gives a list. V'kayrach, u'bilam, v'doeg, v'achitofel, v'gechazi, the servant of Elisha, v'avshalom, who was a prince of Israel, could have had it all almost, but blew it. The Adoniyahu, the Uziyahu, King Uziyahu, who desired to be the king and the Kohen, etc. The Haman. Okay? Shenitnu einehem b'masha einu roi lahem. They all put their eyes on that which they didn't deserve. U'masha bikshu lo nitan lahem, what they wanted they never got. U'masha b'yadam, what they had, natlu mehem, they lost. And the Vilna Gaon has an important general comment on this. And says, Kol Ha'averus, number 17. In fact, all Averus. The Chataim. Okay? And all sins. Baim Mechemda. They ultimately come from Chemda. It's not just an individual sin. It's a general product. It's a general issue. Kamosha Amruki Loi Sachmod Kolel Kol Dibroif or Kol HaTorah. This is an interesting comment. Loi Sachmod says the Vilna Gaon is the summary of all of the Ten Commandments, includes all the Ten Commandments, and in fact includes the whole Torah. There is an idea that the Ten Commandments encapsulate the whole Torah, and if Lo Sachmod encapsulates the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments encapsulate the whole Torah, so Lo Sachmod, if you like, is ultimately the general clean in which the Torah resides. And he explains why. That his stavkut, because being satisfied, maspik, from the word maspik, Shehu hafuch, that is the opposite of chemda, who yisod shal kol haTorah. This idea of being satisfied with what one has, and not dissatisfied and constantly looking over the fence. V'hu ha'emunah shleima, this is the emunah that we have, shaloi lid'oig dagat machar. Not to worry about what's going to be tomorrow. Not such an easy thing to do. But he says that ultimately there is a mitzvah of emunah and bitachon, and constantly being insecure and anxious about what you don't have and what we don't have. We don't have this, we don't have that, we don't have... That is a problem, says the Vilna Gaon. Being happy with what we do have is actually much more of an important focus. And that's something which is not always easy to do. The Bir Halacha, the Mishnah Brura, actually puts it in another light. He paints it in terms of the mitzvah of Avat Hashem. Look in number 19 for a second. There is a mitzvah. The Mishnah Brura at the beginning, the Bir Halacha, he goes through what he calls the, well, he didn't call them this, the Sefer Chinuch calls them this, the Sheish Mitzvah Tmidias. There are six mitzvahs which apply constantly through life. Because of the Sheish Mitzvah Tmidias. Avat Hashem, Yirat Hashem, Belief in Hashem, Emunah Hashem, etc., etc. And one of those is Avat Hashem. How do we love God? And he said these are mitzvahs that apply at all times, in all situations. Even when we're doing the washing up and driving the kids to school and, you know, all of these things apply all the time. So the Mishnah Brura wants to explain here, in the Bir Halacha, the mitzvah of Avat Hashem. And he gives an interesting spin that we don't always think of. Lev Hamokam, Baruch Hu. We have a mitzvah to love God. Shineema v'yahavta et Hashem elokecha. Okay, no chidushim yet. Ge'inyan ha-mitzvah. What is this mitzvah all about? Shiyir ha-adam lahasim kol magamasoi kol machshavto. A person should be careful to place all of their goals, all of their thoughts, acha avas Hashem yisparach, on the idea of avas Hashem, the yarech beliboin should really impose, lay out in their heart, ki kol ma sheyesh ba'olam, everything that there really is in the world, me'osha, children, riches rather, ubanim, and children, v'kavod, and honor, hakol hu, ka'ayin, it's all really nothing, neged avas yisparach, next to avas Hashem. The Yigot Tamid, a person should constantly strive, he said, but Bakashas Chochmas HaTorah, we'll get to that at the end, to increase their Chochmah, the Ma'an Yasek Yidias Hashem, in order to acquire knowledge and understanding of God. The Hakoifeya et Machshavta, but someone who really focuses, the Inyanim Hagashmiim, on materialism,
on this world, on the gashmis of the world, ubehevle ha'olam, and all the nonsense of the world, shaloi l'shem shamayim, without it being really for a purpose. Meaning, everything in this world can be used for a positive purpose. We know this. This is a classic Jewish idea. We don't run off and sit on a hill and be a monk and marry ourselves to God and lead an ascetic lifestyle. That is not what Judaism's about. Pirkei Avos says very clearly, this world is like a corridor in the room in order to prepare for the next world, just like a dressing room in a fancy hotel to get ready for the banquet. If you don't go in the dressing room, you won't be ready for the banquet. On the other hand, if you go to the dressing room and you spend the whole night playing with all the gadgets in the dressing room and polishing your shoes and, you know, doing stuff because that's more fun than the banquet, then what's all that about? Why are you spending the whole your attention in the entrance hall in the dressing room? You should be in the banquet. So therefore, he says you focus constantly on this world in Gashmas, not the Shem Shemayim, rakli hitanei, just to have fun, to have a good time, ulahasik kovod, or to get honor. Bitel aseh zo, you are breaking this aseh va'onsho gadol. Materialism is a big problem. I feel this more when I go to America than when I'm in England. Maybe that's because, as Rav Noach Olwick says, England has all the gashmias of Eretz Israel and all the ruchnias of America, which is perhaps a little unfair on England, but he's American, so maybe he, well, whatever. But I do feel, it must be said, I spend a lot of time driving around America. Because I end up recruiting. I'm going next month to Shabbos, and I go to weird places. I drive across Wisconsin, and I drive across, you know, Missouri, and all the, and I have hours and hours where the scenery is absolutely identical. And you just listen to the radio and what have you, you listen to the radio as an English person, it really hits me. Almost every single advert on the radio is telling me that I should not be happy with life. How can you live when you haven't bought this? How can you live when you don't have that? How can you live because you don't have insurance? How can you sleep at night because you don't have our product? It's constantly making me feel insecure. If you wonder why people are insecure, it's because they're bombarded daily with messages that tell them you should be insecure because you're not happy until you have bought whatever it is. I think this is part of the, and it's not just America, the whole world's like this now. And I see this in my students. It's actually a bit concerning that 20, 30 years ago, a lot of people wanted to find themselves, wanted to go, you know, around the Far East and live in an ashram for 6 months and try and work out what the meaning of life is. Today, people want to find a good job, and that's really their focus from an early age. There's a sort of insecurity and anxiety, and trying to get people to think beyond that. It's difficult. Even young idealistic people who should be making revolutions and changing the world in many ways are just usually trying to get a good degree in order to get a job, etc. And there's nothing wrong with having a job. But the Mishnah Berurah is saying here that the constant focus on the job, the shame job, is itself concerning. What we do about that is a good question. There was a wonderful panel discussion last Friday down the road here, up the road here. I don't know if you heard, the Yeshiva University put on a panel discussion between Rav Meir Soloveitchik and Rebbetzin Esti Rosenberg from Migdal Oz, and they were discussing the differences between chinuch in Eretz Yisrael and America. And there were some very, very interesting things that came out of that. Richard Joel was there, the president of YU as well, and Rav Asaf Bednarz was moderating. And one of the things that that Esti said there was that the focus of college in America, the focus of high school in America is college. That's what the focus of high school is. And I've asked many of my students, they're absolutely. High school is in order to get to college. Whereas the focus of high school in Israel is not college. Kids don't even know what they're going to do. You know, kids leave high school in this country clueless about what they're going to be in 3 years, in 5 years, in 10 years. And that's maybe not such a wonderful thing either. But it does mean that there's less of a focus on the need to just get the degree and get the job, etc. And that's something to be said, I think. There are a lot of issues with Israeli education. I put kids through the Israeli high school system. It had its moments. And there are a lot of things that would work better in England or America. But one thing, Baruch Hashem, that you do, I found, give the kids here, is an idealism. And less of a focus on the need to make money, which the rest of the world seems very involved in, and the Mishnah Berurah is warning against this. The Ibn Ezra, let's give the almost last word to the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, how do you do this? He gives a piece of practical advice. It's actually quite an interesting Ibn Ezra. He says, Loi Sachmait. So he says, Anashim, number 20, Anashim Rabin Yitmal. Many people are very surprised or astonished, Al Zoyfa Mitzvah, on this Mitzvah. Eich yeh adam shelo yachmo davayafa. How can a person not want something that's nice? How can you tell people not to desire? It's natural. Davayafa belibo, in his mind. Bekol mashehu nechmat lemare einav. How can you tell people don't want that? If they want it, they want it. Va'ata, and now he says, etelecha mashal. Let me give you a mashal. Da, ki ish kafri, a village country bumpkin, sheyesh lo das nechoina, who's got his head straight, meaning he's not meshuga, v'hura bat melech, and he sees the princess, shehi yafa, beautiful princess coming past, lo yachmad oisa beliboy, sheyesh kafri. He doesn't want to marry the princess. Oh, I'm going to conquer the princess, and she's going to be my wife. Because he knows that's just ridiculous. It can't be. He's a country bumpkin, she's the princess. No matter what you read on or see, it doesn't. This is not, he's not nuts, this guy. She's avishi yola knafayim. He wants to have wings. La'uf hashamayim, to fly. Just like he knows he can't fly, if he jumps off a cliff, he won't, and he flaps his arms, he won't get anywhere. So too, he's not going to marry the princess. Lo yitachen. It can't be Leos. Kasha ein adam mitaveh lishkov imimot. God forbid, a person doesn't desire their mother, they were to marry their mother, because they know. Afa pishahi yafa, even though she may be very beautiful. Ki behigilu minura, because he knows from his youth, Ladat shehi asuralo, because that's his mother, and he relates to her differently. Kacha kol maskil tarak shiyeda, and he says this is the nimshal now. Everyone has to understand. Ki isha yafa, a beautiful woman, or mamon, or someone's money, lo yimse enu adam ba'avur chachmasa v'das. Raka ashe chalak le'Hashem. We have what we have. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a chelik in life. Va'amar kohelet, and kohelet says, ola adam shaloi amal boy is nenu chelkar. Va'amar chachamim boni, chayi, umazoni, our children, our life, in terms of our length of life and health, and our money, and what we have, lav b'schutam talia milsa. Doesn't depend on what we deserve. Ela b'mazla, it's mazel. The money we have is mazel, the life we lead is mazel, there's a lot of mazel in the world, and Chazal say we can't want somebody else's mazel. U'ba'avu zeh ha'maski lo yitaveh v'lo yachmon. Therefore, why are you looking over the fence and wanting what other people have, says the Ibn Ezra. Ba'acha sheyeda she'eshis re'ehu asura Hashem. If you realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made this woman someone else's wife, or this house someone else's house, sir, or this husband someone else's husband, it's just like the princess in the eyes of the country bumpkin. Alkein hu yismach bechelkei, a person therefore will be satisfied, happy with his lot. Because he realizes Hashem lo ratza latet lo, God didn't want to give it to him. If he'd meant to have it, he would have had it. The lo yuchal lekachto, and he can't take it b'koicha by force. He can't plan, he can't plot for it. Alkein, therefore, he says yiftach b'boiro, he should have bitachon. That God will sustain him, and it'll be what it'll be. And I think sometimes that this is a hard thing to do, which the Ibn Ezra is trying to help us out with. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be competitive and shouldn't make hashtadlus, but it does mean that sometimes things are off limits. But there's one thing that's not off limits, and let me give the last word to that. The Zohar raises the question of chemda in other areas. Says the Zohar in 21, loy sachmoit. Loi pasik time aklam. It doesn't give a reason in the Chumash for loi sachmoit. The itema, maybe you might say, says the Zohar, afilu chamuda de'oraita. Maybe I should even be prohibited from having chemda of de'oraita oser, that's oser too. Kevin de loi pasik, since the Torah just says straight, don't have chemda, maybe I should be satisfied with what I am in all respects. Says the Zohar, no. Tachazi, come and look. Kalhu avata raita klal. Usually the Torah just gives a general prohibition, a general principle. Ubahai, but in this case, avdat prat, it specifies, beis reecha, sadehu, avdai, says the Zohar, b'chol mili da'alma. These are all things in this world. In this world, like the Ibn Ezra says, we can't have chemda for what other people have. Aval or raita, the Torah, ihi chamuda tavi. That is a wonderful chemda. Shashuin, it's something we long for. Ginze dechai archa,
The yumin ba'alma dein uba'alma da'asi. It's this world and it's the next world. Meaning, this idea, and I put in the last source, kinas soifrim, tar b'chachma, the one thing that it's good to have chemda for is other people's ruchnis, other people's Torah, other people's achievements. Meaning, if the chemda can be rather than, I want what you have because why should you have that and I don't have that. But when it comes to Torah, if I desire somebody else's Torah or achievements or I'm inspired by them, it's not that I want to take it from them. It's that I want to be like them. And therefore, there is, if you like, in every middah has a positive channel. And the positive channel for chemda has to be directed towards things that are not things of Olam Hazeh, but things which are beyond Olam Hazeh. And therefore, I personally have found one of the greatest spurs to try and learn more is the realization that you don't know anything and you should, and other people have achieved more, and how could they have achieved this and I never achieved this? What did they do that I didn't do? Let's look into it and find out. And that can be, if you like, a great spur to achievement. And at the end of the day, we're not meant to be resting on our laurels and just saying I'm happy with everything, but in terms of chemda and taiva, hopefully that we are meant to be focusing on the correct things. And that way, please God, there won't be any more scandalous court cases of people who look over the fence and desire other people's things in a way which is destructive of them, others, and the whole community, but rather they should be positive and constructive. Next week, please God, we will go further, snow permitting. We will look, I'd like to look at some copyright issues and other things like that. You had a question?
One of the following words after this, which is ringing in my head.
Yes. I don't know the song. Afterwards we can have a sing song. I don't know the words. What's that? So you didn't, oh, it's Yudin Nefesh? Oh, Elach Hamdi, yes. So it's Yudin Nefesh. I'm not good with words, it's out of context. Balkairati, good with words. Okay, very good. Yes, sir. Okay. Okay. Or Bechelko. Right, everything is in the, even the Ten Commandments, like Loi Tirtzach, you could say Loi Tirtzach, or Lo Tirtzach. Yeah. Or Loi Tirtzach. Like, it's all in the, it's all in the, it's all in the Nusach. Bechelko, you're absolutely right. Good. Oh, thank you.